This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, it certainly is a beautiful day here in the Umpqua Valley.
Well, it seems to be a perfect day in the Umpqua Valley. Yes,
absolutely.
You know, the temperature is just right. What is it, about 70 or something like that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I like 70. There's nothing wrong with 70 in sunshine, man.
How about 83 for tomorrow?
I'm questioning that. I will be surprised that if that occurs, but you never know. I don't know who the weather guessers are playing with, but anyway, we'll see.
Well, I hope it gets up there. I could use an 80 degree day.
Okay, well, I'll go out in the parking lot and sit there in the hot pavement. And
well, yeah, well, I don't have to work outside, you see.
Take your earphones out there. You can run your show from outside.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening today, and welcome to the Mike Winters Garden Show. And we'll speak about gardening, and we speak about lawns, we speak about plants. I got a whole bunch of those things to talk about today.
Okay.
And if you have a question, you can call 673-4464, and if you have a problem and you want to discuss it and try to get a quick answer, that's what I'm here for. So, 673-4464. And we'll help you on your way to gardening success. How's that? But, you know, the other night when it was raining, and it rained all night, I loved it. I thought, this is great. Oh, good, good, good. And then, you know, kind of halfway the next day a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were puddles everywhere, actual puddles. And I thought, yeah, that's great, man. I loved it. I loved it. And I thought, that'll, you know, every little bit helps us catch up. And, you know, my little creek is still running and, you know, not like it has in regular springs and winters, but it's running. There's water flowing through. It looks good. And, you know, just I love the rain when we need it. I'm not so in love with it, you know, in the middle of July, but it wouldn't be bad if it rained for a couple of days in July and June, a little bit in August. What the heck? Just do it on a Saturday, Sunday. How's that?
There you go.
I don't have to work in it.
Well, Valley Weather Guesser says chance of showers starting on Friday through Tuesday night, but very slim. It's only like 20%.
Well, what did I keep hearing about a snow on Monday?
Yeah, Monday night.
Monday night, snow?
Well, it says it's down to 1,600 feet, rising to 2,200 feet.
Oh, okay.
That's way up there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not going to hit good old Rosenberg.
Nah,
it's okay. But, you know, if we had one rainy day per week with about a half inch of rain, just for a day each week, maybe Wednesdays would be good, all of our plants at home and in the hills would be fireproof, growing well,
nice,
looking good. The hills would be green for quite a long time. And, you know, that's only like 2 inches a month. But, you know, through the spring and summer and maybe double or triple that from November to, you know, the following January, where we get back up to where we're around 30, 35 inches of precipitation a year.
Yeah.
And the snowpack equivalent of that in the higher elevations would be, you know, 8 or 10 feet of snow. And I've been to Diamond Lake when it was that deep back, you know, when my kids are small, we go up there to get a Christmas tree or go sledding or something like that. And man, the snow banks were so tall, and you think, geez Louise, how they get all this snow up here? But you know, and you could go back up in May and there was still snow on the ground, you know, not much, but still in May.
Some there, yeah.
And it was still melting and still feeding the creeks and still feeding the watershed. And you know, it was good. I had no problems with that. And I thought, geez Louise.
How much is up there now?
I think somebody said there was maybe a foot or something like that.
No,
maybe 2 feet. I don't.
Yeah,
they said along the road, but I, you know, in the higher elevations like Mount Thielson and Mount Bailey, I'm sure they're pretty well. Mount Bailey for sure packed up pretty good.
Yeah,
and
that's good news.
Yeah, and I hiked up Mount Bailey, my brother and I, years ago in the summer, about mid-July, somewhere in there. And we took our sons, who were 5 and 6, 7 years old, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And you get up to the top, and on the top, on the side that you can't see, there's like a real smooth bowl, all, you know, for several hundred feet. Mm-hmm. And my son and my brother's son, of course, they were going to slide down this dude.
Oh, sure. Why
and
not?
They did, boy.
Did
and
they?
Oh, yeah. And they were a long way down. I thought, I hope they don't crash into some rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were young enough and strong enough to climb back up onto that bowl. And it was, you know, several hundred feet.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was not in, you know, fairly steep. I mean, they were whizzing down that thing.
Bet they had a lot of fun.
Yeah, oh, they had a blast. And it's an easy walk, too. The trail that goes up Bailey, there's nothing treacherous about it. You know, you could almost take a wheelchair up there, for crying out loud.
A little motorized.
Yeah, take a skateboard up there.
Yeah.
Back in the day when we had rain and moisture and things like that.
All that good stuff
that kept the Umpqua, South Umpqua and the North Umpqua, you know, full and clean and
actual
nice.
Rivers.
And yes. Yeah, I used to go kayaking on the North Umpqua and start out there at Amaker Park and head down that way, and a heck of a lot of fun. There would be people everywhere doing that kind of thing.
Sure.
Whoa. Yep. All right. Anyway, enough of the weather report. I'm sorry. I got carried away there. Oh, geez. But, you know, with proper precipitation, our creeks, our rivers, our wells, our springs would be operational year-round. There would not be any real deterrent as far as irrigation in the summer and watch out you don't waste water and, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And that would be nice to get back to that particular, because that way your gardens and your lawns would have sufficient water for a good crop and green grass and those kinds of things. And, you know, the fish populations would be healthy and vibrant. And, you know, if we have that, I would appreciate that. I remember one time I was at a Docks game. It was like, mid-June. Mm-hmm. And I saw when these black clouds came over the horizon from the east.
Uh-oh.
And it was a few lightning things. And mm-hmm. they were saying, well, maybe we should stop the game and all that. Well, before they could even stop the game, it started to pour. I mean, in buckets. And there was like 2 inches of rain in the parking lot right outside the stadium. I've never seen that kind of June rain ever. It must have rained 2 or 3 inches within an hour.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Well, it was some years ago, you know. Probably 15 years ago, something like that. But it was amazing. And then it was over. Then the sun came back out. Well, okay, man.
It's like the desert or something.
Yeah. But anyway, spring is up and running, I'll tell you, and it's going full blast. And it's beautiful out there. And any direction you look, blooms on shrubs and trees, and the bloom time is going to last until June. And with the late bloomers, so enjoy the spring. We live in a very beautiful part of the country. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And when newcomers stop at our nursery that have just moved up from California, Sacramento.
California?
They move up, and they're moving up here, baby. They're getting out of California. They all comment on the beauty of Douglas County. This is such a beautiful place. The trees and this and that. I mean, they're really serious about that when we're talking to them. I said, well, this is nothing. You ought to see it when it really rains and how green it all is. But
you may want to go back to California.
No, they won't. But most of them are from more arid type climate.
Yeah.
You know, there's some folks from Arizona, but the vast majority of them are from California. And it's interesting, too, to the ones that I've met, they were in agriculture. They had ranches in the Central Valley of California, and it just got so dry and hot that they just kind of went,
couldn't do it.
We're out of here. We're going to go north where there's a little bit more green and we can actually we can actually do that. But it's amazing to hear them talk, you know, and they pop in and they love everything they see at the nursery, and they want to have these questions and that questions, and they're just enthused about being in Douglas County. And I think we that live here full time kind of get used to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So consequently, it takes a big bolt of spring to jar us and go, yeah, we do live in a pretty, pretty, pretty place.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or if you go to, you know, I've gone to Texas a couple of times to visit a daughter down there below Austin. And, you know, it's pretty dry country. It's not desert, but it's Joshua trees and what do they call it? Texas red cedar and those kinds of things. And it's cattle country and that kind of thing. But it's not lush. You know, you get into some fancy subdivisions where they've got beautiful homes and landscaping. That's kind of lush in there, but they're far and few between. But, you know, out there in the countryside, it's you can tell they don't get a whole lot of rain. And it gets hot down there in that
shows,
country, too.
Yeah.
And then you fly back to good old Eugene, get out, and you go, whoa, look at this. It's still spring here. It's great.
Yeah.
So enjoy.
We really do take it for granted if you're around it all the
yes,
time.
Yes, you do. You do. And I try not to do that every day. I look at it with a new set of eyes, and I go, wow, I am so fortunate to live here. So I hope you that are all listening have the same opinion, because it's true. And as we get a little warmer, it's going to be safe to plant seeds and small vegetable plants. The last week we've had, you know, some pretty frosty, cool days, and maybe this Monday thing they're talking about is going to be kind of cooler and all that, but just kind of watch the weather and play it by ear. But if it stays up into the, you know, low 40s or even in the high 30s, you can feel free to begin to plant small vegetable plants. And, you know, here we are, first part of April, and April heavy frost or snow isn't very common. You know, it's happened, of course, but yeah, it's not common. And there are some veggies that can be planted earlier, but to be safe, you know, waiting till, say, the second week in April, mid-April, I think is best. I mean, you'll have more success, and there's less danger of one of those freak freezes coming along. And not only are the days warmer, but we have longer daylight. Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
I love that. You know, it's not dark at 5 o'clock for crying out loud.
Women in bikinis.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But it's also a good idea to stagger your garden, and I'm talking vegetables here, not shrubs, not trees, that kind of thing. But it's a good thing to stagger the timing of your planting. In other words, don't do it all in one day in case one of them weird cold fronts pops through. I've made that mistake, you know, way back when. And one day I plant, I don't know, I was probably too many tomatoes, you know, 5 or 6 tomato plants. And then when they began to shed their fruit, you know, how do you get rid of 200 tomatoes every day? I mean, they're there, and they're, if you don't eat them, they drop on the ground and rot, or the bugs get them. And so we couldn't eat them fast enough, but we sure gave a lot of them away. And so stagger those kinds of plantings, you know, maybe put a couple of tomato plants in and a couple peppers in now. And then maybe in a week and a half or so, put a couple more, and maybe a week after that or 2 weeks after that, put a couple more, so that you have a long-term, slow kind of crop coming along all the way into the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that correctly, you're not having to pick 200 tomatoes a day just to keep up with the plants.
And half of them don't, you know, go to waste.
Right, exactly.
Well, we got a break coming
up. Okay, we got a break.
And a phone call.
Good, we'll take the break first?
Yep.
Okay.
So call her there. Please hold on. We'll be right with you. News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1490.
Yeah.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right. Without further ado, let us go to the phone lines. Hi, you're on Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. Thanks for holding.
Hi. I have a question, Mike, about snails. What do you, I have snails all over the place, and I would get chickens to eat them, but can't do that. So what do you recommend to get rid of these snails in my flower garden?
Well, there is a slug and snail bait that you can buy at like the co-op or something like that, and you just sprinkle it all the way around the edge of the garden, the perimeter of the garden, or around the plants that are being affected. And what happens is the slugs will, it's attractive to slugs and snails, and so they go up there and eat it and die. It's that simple.
And so the birds won't eat that?
No, the birds won't eat it.
The birds don't. Is there anything natural that you know?
No, I don't. Well, the most natural thing I know is like a stick with a sharp point on it that you can go out there and,
right.
and do that. But,
right, yeah. Or a foot on the shell. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or yeah. Salt.
Yeah, salt. Salt or, also works.
Oh, salt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I might try that. I'm afraid that I'll, because there's cats and birds, and I'm afraid to put poison out like that for snails.
Well, normally, I've had cats all my life in our area, in our yard, et cetera, and we've used it consistently for years, and we've never had had a fatality or a dead bird or a dead cat or anything like that.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Mike. Have a beautiful sunny day.
Well, it is, isn't it? It's great to be alive.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Thank you for the
Have
call.
A good day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah. All righty, that opens up the lines once again.
So if you have a call, 673-4464, when we'll have a conversation, actually. But, and we're talking about planting time and growing seasons, and just remember, our growing season actually lasts into October. Oh, we got another call?
We do have another call.
Great.
Hi there, you're on with Mike Winters.
Hey, Mr. Winters, you sell your nursery yet?
No, not yet. Want to buy it?
if it was 10 or 15 years ago, yes, I would.
Oh, okay. You're too old for that?
No, I've owned three nurseries, and I'm done.
Oh, doggone. So, do you have a question,
John?
Nothing
personal. Anyway, what I did is I had a friend, Robert, that is a concrete contractor. He had a bunch of the concrete mesh stuff that you put in to reduce the cracking and stuff like that.
Right.
And I folded it over. I made it about 2 foot fold each side, and then I draped clear visqueen over it to make a cheapy quick cloche, and I planted 10 different beans and peas. And I've got peppers growing, Mike, at this time of year.
That's good.
it's a 40-foot row. It's up by that colorful sugar maple that I bent over to, and they're growing like crazy. They sprouted up and just beautiful colors. And anyway,
I've
got a heck of a garden, and it's just blowing my mind that it's this early.
Do you get much frost up on your place?
Did you say, did I get much squash?
Frost. Cold.
Oh, no, none.
Yeah.
Nope, I didn't have a single. I do the weather every day, twice a day, and didn't get one burst of frost this year.
Well, that's significant in your growth of your plants.
Of course it is.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember being up there and looking at it. It's got a little bit of a side hill and downhill, and so the air moves.
Yep.
And I've just always taken advantage of it, and I've always been absolutely stunned that I don't get any frost. There have been years we never got any frost.
Yeah. Well, you're in a good location, John.
I'm very thankful, very very thankful. Anyway, I got peppers and other warm weather stuff growing in that close thing, and I just can't believe it.
Well, enjoy.
I'm not bragging. I didn't. I hardly had anything to do with it. I just took.
Well, you don't control the weather, John.
No, and I just bless Mike Winters for giving me such good weather.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Blessings on the Winters family.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, for the call. I appreciate it.
Take care, sir.
Bye bye.
Alrighty. Bye bye.
Yeah. It's garden time, and people are going crazy doing their gardens and stuff, and you know, wanting, chomping at the bit. Oh, you got tomatoes. Oh, you got peppers. Yeah. Oh, you got this. Oh, you got that. And we put ours out a little bit later than the box stores. The box stores, I think, put them out too early, and they, you know, some of their stuff does get damaged.
Mm-hmm.
But we got ours in here this last week, and you know, some of it we actually put in the greenhouse to grow up a little bit hardier, even though we keep them in a sheltered area for sale, and we're slowly bringing them out as the days get warmer. So we want to make sure that when we sell a plant, it's going to live, and you're not going to have a problem with that. And but like I say, if you're not sure about planting time, drive out to Garden Valley, check out the commercial farmers, and if they're planting, you can feel pretty safe doing the same thing in your home garden, because they do it to survive, to make money. That's their business. And if they're feeling secure enough and safe enough that the bad weather has passed and nothing's going to die, they're out there doing their thing. So kind of time, you know, watch them. Just drive Garden Valley, Brosai Orchards there in Winston, and, you know, different places around the county that people are actually growing commercial gardens. And then you can feel safe doing, like I say, doing the same thing in your own home garden. You can also get good advice from the county extension office, as long, you know, because they're also in the gardening business. So if you have questions that, you know, I speak here for an hour and you don't call, or you listen to some things, but you still have questions, the extension agent is right next to the courthouse. They're glad to help you. They're good folks. They grow great gardens. They know what they're doing, and they'll give you good information. So you can depend on them. I mean, that's one government entity that really works to the benefit of the public.
For the people.
Yeah, they are definitely for the people, I'll tell you. Oh, geez, Louise. But, you know, one thing, too, you can do, if you're anxious, you can plant and raise planters, and that'll probably work because the soil is workable, you know, even with our recent rain that we had. However, if you're planting in the ground, it may be too wet to till and, you know, prepare for new plants or seeds. But if your soil is too wet, you know, wait a few more days, maybe a week, and then till it all up if you haven't done it yet. Test the ground, you know, with a shovel, and if the soil breaks up nicely, hey, you're ready to go. If you take a chunk of soil and put it in your hands and kind of crumble, and it all crumbles, it doesn't turn into a ball of clay, you're pretty much good to go. The ground is warm enough and damp enough that it won't do any damage to your new plants. You know, because chunks of clay don't break up until they're you know, hard, and then you got to break them up with a hammer or something like that. But when you are tilling, you know, go as deep as you can, at least 6 to 8 inches deep. That way, when you put a new plant in, those roots have some place to go. It's not just 4 inches or 2 inches of good soil and then it hits, you know, hard stuff. So till or shovel or however you break up your garden, you know, get it down there, like I say, at least 6 to 8 inches, and that way the new, if you buy vegetable plants or even seeds, the roots have an easier time getting established. And you don't want to do all that work and then say, why did half of them die?
Yeah.
Because you didn't work the soil, you know. But, those that don't break up, they're just not ready to plant. So, so you know, back off.
back off, boogaloo.
Put the tiller away. Oh, boy. But the best garden prep actually takes place in the fall. You know, after the gardening season, prior to the winter rains, if you have the time, like in October, you know, even into November, if we haven't had a soggy fall, you can till your native soil and add some sand or topsoil or peat moss, mix it all really well, and let it set for the winter. And in the spring, a quick tilling and you're ready to plant, and because all the goodies are there, all the goodies you've already tilled in, you know, 4 months previous, and you're good to go, and they're ready to go. And then after your new veggies are planted, you can, you know, can add a little bit of garden fertilizer, very little, just kind of sprinkle it around. Go light and don't let the fertilizer touch the new plants. Don't let any of the fertilizer, you know, the granules, touch the stem of the plant. Mm. And so you want to keep the fertilizer like 6 inches away from the plants. The roots will get it, don't worry. Over a short period of time, those roots will get in all the fertilizer they actually need. And keep your new plants damp, again, not soaked. Don't rot the roots. And as the plants mature and are growing well, you can fertilize lightly, say, one more time, and but no more after that. And as you watch your garden grow, you're going to be able to tell what it needs. Just don't overdo the water and the fertilizer, and you'll be eating well, and you'll be eating lots, because because all of a sudden you say, wow, man, my tomatoes, I'm getting 10 pounds off of each plant or something, or more. I mean, 10 pounds is not much on potato, on tomatoes.
A couple.
Yeah, some big ones, yeah. Even though, you know, I had like, three or four different varieties. Some were only as big as marbles. And I forget their name, and I thought, what's wrong with them? They're red, and they look good, but they're only as big as a marble, and they were delicious. You just pop them off, and bam, it was delicious.
Cherry tomatoes, are they?
No, cherries are bigger than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the cherry tomatoes are like a boulder,
oblong.
Well, there's some oblong ones. I don't know what. There's so many names. I can't keep track of them all, man. There's always new ones coming out. Oh, this one will grow, you know, and do this. And
in a hurricane.
Yeah. But you got your hand on the button.
Oh, we got a break.
Okay, let's take a break. I'll get into something else.
We'll be right back on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thank you, sir.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hello there. We are back with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show. And what's our phone number, Mike?
I don't know. I think it's 673-4464 for a question.
Bingo.
Yeah, you thought you'd catch me, huh?
I thought maybe.
Nah. Once I got it, I got it, baby.
You're smarter than that.
Well, I got it. I don't remember my own home phone, but I remember this one. Anyway, I've been talking about gardens and when to plant and how to plant and those kinds of things. And hopefully it's helping somebody out there that had questions but is afraid to call. And you can have a more successful, more productive garden just with a few simple adjustments in timing and soil preparation and those kinds of things, instead of getting only, you know, 4 tomatoes, you can get, you know, 44 tomatoes off that same plant doing it correctly. Mm. So that's what this show is all about, huh? How can I get better production, huh? How can I treat the soil? What do I have to do to make it viable so that it grows things well? And that's what I try to do, is just pass on these hints. Because I've made these mistakes in my past life, back when I was, 18 or 19 or 20 or whatever, and I try this or try that, and so, well, I wonder why that didn't grow. Well, I watered it every day. Well, bingo.
Answered your own question.
Yeah, I know. Oh. But the thing, the most recent weather prediction I've heard this week is tomorrow's going to be 80. Well, that's perfect, I guess, for working in the garden and planting new tender vegetable plants. But in the next breath, I heard snow on Monday. Now, I don't know why. I even heard Kyle Bailey say that. So he's at fault.
Did he specify the snow level?
No. It just says snow is possible on Monday.
Well, probably in the mountains.
Well, he didn't say in the mountains. And I thought, man, wait a minute. How can it be 80 one day and then snow?
snow next.
A few days later. Come on. There's something going on. But this is April, not January, okay?
Yeah.
And my hope is that the weather guessers are wrong again. And, you know, wherever you get your information off, whatever computer systems, et cetera, and forecasters out there that, you know, they think they have it all together, but they really don't. You know, how many times are they wrong? How many times are they predicting rain and it doesn't? Or how many days, how many times they predict the sun and it rains and it's foggy? You know?
Or snow and it doesn't?
Just keep track of this stuff. And you after a while, you'll go, what are they doing? Do they ever get anything right?
But I've come to the conclusion that if they predict snow, it won't. It's when they don't predict,
predict
it.
Predict snow, that's when we get Snowmageddon.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. But just look up in the sky, play the weather by ear, and be cautious in your planting. And, you know, if there's going to be that cold on Monday, I would hold off on putting things in the ground for a couple more days after that. So maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. You're not going to be late because this is still April. You can plant. I've planted stuff in June and July and was harvesting vegetables in September and October. And,
oh, wow.
So it works. You know, that's why I say you can stagger your plantings. You can start some now, start some next month, and start some the month after that. And then you have a rotation and a consistent supply of edible fresh food throughout the summer and even into the fall. And if you're a canner or you do the freeze-dried thing or whatever, you've got a good supply right there.
Never ending.
So be careful, be cautious, pay attention. And like I said, when you see the commercial farmers putting in their plants, just remember those vegetable plants were grown in a warm greenhouse as well. And they are tender, but those farmers know when to put it in. And planting seeds will be okay as they won't begin to grow until the soil warms up. The seeds will stay dormant. You know, let's say the soil temperature is 38 or 39. Mm-hmm. Well, that seed's going to sit there. But as the soil temp gets up to mid-40s, bingo, it reacts and begins to grow. So.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Nature at its best.
Exactly. It knows it. And it can't talk, walk, or anything else.
Well, no, I better let it go.
Yeah, you better let it go. This is a family show. And also, keep this in mind, that weather is predicted by computers, not farmers. All right? Farmers are good predictors of weather. They pay attention because they're outside all the time. Also, us nursery guys pay attention to that as well. Yeah. We don't want to do anything when it's too wet or too cold or too hot, too dry, that kind of thing. You kind of give it some time. So, different kind of direction now. As the camellias are blooming, and they're continuing to bloom all over the place, there's some of them have peaked, and they're losing some of their blooms. But at my nursery, there are new blooms coming on all our camellias, so I'm saying, hey, they're blooming. But the azaleas and the rhododendrons are starting to show some color. The azaleas are usually first. They're a little bit earlier than rhodies, but I can see some color. I saw a few rhodies here that were already, burst out of their bud and were in bloom. And rhodies, they're very beautiful and very tough. I mean, they are one tough plant. So are azaleas, but I think rhodies really have a notch up on those. Mm. And a lot of the folks new to our area are not aware of how rhodies add to the landscaping. And they come in all sizes, you know, from dwarfs that only grow like 1 or 2 feet tall and about 2 feet wide to giants that can grow up to 15 feet or more. Not instantly, of course, but over the years, they can get that large. They can get to be looking like trees. And
wow.
You can prune them into trees if you like. So when you're shopping for rhodies, do some research on sizes. And you'll see. And when you see a small rhodie at a nursery, just remember, it's young and it won't stay small unless it's a true dwarf. A true dwarf maybe gets 2 feet tall, 2 feet wide. But if you're buying a gallon-sized rhododendron that's, say, a foot high in the can, don't think it's going to stay that tall. And don't think it's going to stay that small and put it next to the house, 2 feet from the house, because in 5 or 6 years you're going to wonder, why did I ever put that plant there?
Yeah, surprise.
Surprise.
We're gonna call. Hey, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
It's that obnoxious John Gay again. Sorry.
Okay.
Mike, have you ever heard of a guy using a rhodi as a trellis as a way to train stuff up onto to get beans and
oh yeah
and pretty flowers and stuff? It's an absolutely beautiful idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very decorative.
And they're just so strong and beautiful plants, and you get those blooms going if you think about it, and you know what bloom you're going to get on the other stuff, and then match it to the rhodi stuff. Oh boy!
But the thing you have to be careful about, any vining type plant that will do that, it's after a while it gets obnoxious and will choke the rhodi.
Choke it out and get it all buried.
Yeah, it will. That's a good suggestion. Thank you, John.
We'll take care.
All right. Mike. Hey, I was going to share this story with you. I saw it on online today. A town in England has decided to pull all the daffodils in one of their city parks because they're afraid children will eat them and be poisoned. Although there's never been a problem and the daffodils have been there for decades. I think somebody's a moron.
Could be. I've never... That's interesting. I've never seen it. Well, none of my kids ate daffodils.
No, none of mine either.
And I didn't even have to tell them not to eat them.
I know. It's a bang, you know, bang, bang.
Yeah, I'm not going to eat them. I mean, the first bite couldn't be that tasty.
No.
I will have to do some research on that and look that up and see if there's any toxicity involved in eating daffodils.
Daffodils, yeah. If it hadn't said England, I would have thought that came from China or Russia, story. But.
I don't think daffodils will grow in either of those countries.
Oh, they won't? Okay.
Yeah, too cold.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, I didn't want to go that far, though. Oh, golly. Now you got me all messed up here. Okay, I was talking about camellias and their bloomings and their rhodies and things like that. And I got this done talking about dwarf rhododendrons, which, like I say, stay small, 2 feet tall, 2 feet wide, perfect little plant, small leaves, and usually they have more blooms than you can even count. So when shopping for rhodies, do some research on the sizes. Ask whoever you're buying them from, how big does this plant get? How do I plant it? What type of soil do I use? What type of fertilizer do I use? What type of watering technique shall I use? And if they don't answer those questions, go to a real nursery and ask them. They'll have the answers for you. But, you know, it's most folks that have never, have never really planted or done any landscaping in a new home, maybe a young couple or a retired couple that mm-hmm. lived in a condo and then finally bought a home or something like that. They've never done that. And so lack of knowledge is not bad. It's refusing to
learn
about what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's the bad part, you know. But if I don't have, and I'm looking at stuff all the time. I'm doing research all week long. You know, I see a new booklet, I see a new magazine about plants or something like that. I quickly look through it and see if there's anything that I can brand new that I don't know anything about. And by golly, there's always two or three articles that I don't. Wow, I didn't know that. And so I read about it and see. Well, I wonder if it grows here. A few months ago, I talked about lemons and limes and oranges and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, I stumbled on an article like that, that there's people in Portland and Washington that grow citrus exclusively, and they're actually planting them out in the non-protected, you know, put them out in your yard, and they're having success with them.
Nice.
Yeah. And so we connected with them somehow. I haven't seen any literature yet. I wanted to see what actually they had to try it here in Douglas County, for crying out
loud. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And if it works, great. We'll have orange groves
growing. There you go.
Besides our plum trees.
Oh. Yeah. Boy, those are good, but they're not, you know.
Yeah. We got a break?
They attract bees.
Yep. What attracts bees?
The plums.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we'll be back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show in a moment. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty, 452 and a nice looking 71 degrees.
That sounds good to me, both of them, 452 and 71. I like that.
Home straight. Oh, we have a phone call coming in.
Let me push
a couple of buttons.
I love phone calls.
Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
I wanted to apologize for being remiss. I have meant to thank Dale personally because he makes your show happen and he does such a wonderful job. Even if his dad is kind of a moron.
Well, thanks, John.
And I'd like to apologize for calling him a moron. He is plant limited.
Well, believe me, I've called him worse, but
no, he's a unique gardener.
Yes, that's a nice word for it.
Were you unique up behind him?
Yeah, unique up behind him and yell at him.
I love you guys. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, I started to talk about rhododendrons.
Yes, sir.
And that's going to continue into next week because there's no way I can go through it all right now. But there are about 1,000 basic species, not counting all the hybrids that have been created by mad plant scientists living in greenhouses. Lots of the basic species. That means, hey, those are the ones that live out there in the country, and nobody hybridized them. That's the natural rhododendron. But 1,000 basic species of rhodies. Now, when you think about that, and they grow all over the world. They grow in China. They grow in Asia. They grow in Florida. They grow on our coast. I mean, they are a versatile plant. And then, of course, you've got these greenhouse scientists who are saying, "Yeah, let's make this one purple with red stripes and yellow dots," and they play with the pollen, they do some grafting, and after a few years, they've got what they wanted, and if it takes and it lasts a couple of years, bingo, you start seeing them on the market. So it's a long process, but that's how these new and different colors come about, and it's not just on rhodies, it's on any plant. Mm. So. And like I said, they are tough plants. One variety grows in the North Pole region.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Now, think about the temperature range there. Mm. And then there's another variety that I was reading about thrives in the sand dunes of Florida. Now, I read that part of it. In the sand dunes in Florida, I didn't get the names. They had names, but they were too long and hard to pronounce. So, but here in Douglas County, we have wild rhodies growing along our coast in sandy soil, and others growing at like 5,000 feet elevation in the Cascade Mountains or near Diamond Lake and Crater Lake and all that country. So it would seem that locally they would be easy to grow, and they are. Yeah. And with the right conditions, the right conditions are very important because these low elevation rhodies need a little help here and there. They're not like their wild cousins. There are sun rhodies that can grow in full sun, and then there are shade rhodies that grow in full shade. And then most of the rhodies can grow in a half and half situation where you get morning sun, afternoon shade, and the majority of rhododendrons will do well in that kind of a situation. But in all cases, when you're planting them, consider your soil conditions. Again, it all comes down to, you know, how good is the soil? Will the soil support that? Is it organic enough? Is it drain well? You know, lots of those things. One thing I have not seen or read about is rhodies that grow in swamps. So, on our coast, they actually grow in the sand. I've seen them. I've been over there. I did a consultation for some folks last year that were going to build a subdivision right on the edge of the dunes. the park.
Uh-huh.
And so they're wild roadies. There were thousands of wild roadies everywhere I looked. They had a big clearing, about 3-acre clearing in there. Mm. But I was looking at the plant material and coming up with a list of what would grow there so they could, you know, add more plant material, et cetera. And some of the, right on the edge of the dunes, this is where they ride their dune buggies and stuff, there were pine trees and a few fir trees, not many, but mostly pine, mm-hmm. and roadies everywhere, growing in sand, not watered, not fertilized,
wow.
not pruned, not taken care of in any way except for what nature
does it for.
Yeah, does for them. And that's how tough they are. So. Yeah. When people kill roadies in their yard, it's their fault. It's not the plant's fault. Not,
yeah.
And we always try to instruct, I always do when I'm waiting on customers is, you know, this is a rhododendron. This is what it takes. This is how it's going to grow. This one grows in the sun. This one grows in the shade. And give them a quick education on rhododendron success because most rhododendrons are fairly expensive, and you don't want to sell a $40 rhododendron or $50 rhododendron.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to take it home and kill it in two weeks or 3 weeks or a month.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, but we're talking big roadies.
Uh-huh.
You know, smaller ones are, you know, 1995 and, you know, then 29 and 39, you know, on and on.
Just, yeah. Yeah,
all depends on the age, all depends on the size, and it depends on the rarity of the plant itself.
Oh, okay.
Some are very rare and
yeah.
hard to come by, so they're more expensive as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to tune up what I've just said for next week's show
okay.
and go into it in a lot more detail, and hopefully some people will get educated. So is that about tear it up today?
Yeah, we got about 10 seconds.
10 seconds. Well, thank you for listening. I enjoy phone calls. I enjoy this show, and I've been doing it like 20 years now, and I can't believe it. So,
do you need any more employees? Might as well ask.
Oh, I need 200.
Okay. It's that time of the year.
Yeah, somebody take my place, please.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Well, you're welcome, Dale.
We'll see you next week.
Yep.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, where the afternoon report is next.